Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Real Birth Podcast, the show where real parents share real birth stories and get really honest about how it went. You might be a first-time expectant parent, or on your eighth baby. Perhaps you're a birth worker, or maybe you just love learning about birth. Whoever you are welcome here. This podcast aims to educate and empower listeners through the real stories of mums and dads. I'm Lucy Hill. I'm a doula, a mum of a toddler, and a complete birth nerd. Join me as I invite all kinds of parents to share their stories of pregnancy, birth, and beyond. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. This series is sponsored by our friends at Bridge House Pilates. If you're pregnant, planning to conceive, or have recently had a baby, then you need to know about Megan and her incredible courses. In fact, as part of our partnership, Bridge House Pilates is offering an exclusive 20% discount off their online, on-demand postnatal Pilates course. The program can be fit around your busy life as a new parent and is the ideal way to gently restore your core fitness and take a bit of time for both your mind and body. Find out more by visiting my social media. I'm at Real Birth Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and you'll find all the links you need to take part in this exclusive discount. Hello and welcome to the Real Birth Podcast. This week my guest is Sabina, who had her baby by cesarean under a general anaesthetic after a long and difficult labour. Sabina's story is really important to acknowledge, as after growing up in a family where natural, unmedicated birth was her normal, she felt huge amounts of grief and anger at her cesarean experience, especially given the restrictions that were placed on her and her husband due to COVID at the time. Sabina has some very raw, honest reflections on what she would now do differently, given her knowledge, and she has some great advice for new parents when it comes to feeding support too. While Sabina's birth story isn't the euphoric, positive experience that many expectant parents might really want to hear, for a lot of people it will really resonate. I'm sure Sabina wouldn't mind me saying that it might be a useful example of some of the interventions which can occur when in a hospital setting, particularly when you are not able to have an advocate by your side. Thank you so much, Sabina, for being really open and honest with me today. Here she is to tell her story. Well, first things first, I'll say welcome, Sabina. Thank you so, so much for joining me. For everybody listening, if you listened to Rosie's episode last season, Sabina is Rosie's sister. So it was really lovely to have you get in touch and want to share your story as well. So yeah, welcome and thank you very, very much. Before we get going, do you want to just share a little bit about you and who's in your family?
It's me and my husband of 11 years. He's been, 11 years, 3 years married this year. We got married. We had a pre-COVID wedding, 2019 November. So we were really lucky.
Got in there.
Just got in there. Yeah, we bought our home in February the 2020 as well. So we really just got everything done basically before the pandemic. Not the baby, which we'll come to, but my daughter Leliana, she's born in December 2020, and my dog Dexter, my golden retriever, who's a very important part of our family as well.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Oh, that's really great. Tell me about your process towards thinking about having children and falling pregnant with your first pregnancy. How did that go? And yeah, was that something that you decided on quite early on?
Well, I knew that we always wanted to be married before we tried for children anyway. So then we were like, we got married and I was like, oh yeah, we'll go on a honeymoon and get pregnant. But because I went to Thailand and obviously the Zika virus is there. So like my sister was like, you know, the Zika virus is there. And I'm like, what? And I was like, so determined. I was going to get pregnant in like the November after we got married and, you know, be like a honeymoon baby. But no, we had to wait then sort of like the 3 months just to be sure when we got back. I will say we're very lucky. We tried and we were pregnant the first month, like immediately. Like we didn't do anything. Like we just tried once and that was it. So
that's amazing.
We're very lucky. Yeah.
Yeah.
First month.
And how did you find out you were pregnant? Did you just take a test, or did you have a feeling, or what happened?
If you've seen Rosie's story, her son Johnsy was born in March. So I was traveling down. I live in Cardiff, and I traveled down to where she lived in Cornwall. And I stopped by my other sister on the way, and I stopped there, and I was just so tired, so exhausted. And then I was like, I think I left my coat at my sister's house and got to my other sister's house, held the baby and stuff, and I was like, oh, I'm just so tired. She goes, oh, you might be pregnant, like this. And I was like, oh, my periods come in. I was like, I've had cramps and the periods come in, my boobs are sore. That's just typical me. And I was like, and you know, holding the newborn baby was really nice. And then I went home and left my like bag there as well. And I was like, oh my God, I've left my stuff everywhere and I'm so tired. And then I got home and then I just did a test and it was positive. And it was like maybe I think a couple of days before I was actually due on, I did like an early test. And yeah, it was pretty obviously I
Yeah.
was pregnant. And
Did
it
you
was
tell your sister straight away?
I think we told our parents first, and then it was like maybe a couple of days later. I just couldn't. I'm really bad of holding secrets. I just told them, and I was like, "Yeah, they know. I can't wait." I'm like, "Yep." So they knew, and then my sister was like, "I told you."
Well, yeah, that's it. They had their gut instinct before you did so. And how was the first part of your pregnancy? Did you have lots of symptoms and did you feel okay?
To be honest, I think my symptoms were all right. Like I was bloated and I had a lot of nausea. I think I was sick to t sick. I think I was sick a total of only 4 times, like that out of the whole early trimester anyway. And it was just really nauseous. I just remember eating just dry chicken and, you know, just really basic thing. And I think one time it was like I had a meal and I ate it. It was really nice. And then the next second I was running down the toilet and I remember catching it in my hand.
Oh.
Around the toilet. And I think that was the worst time. One time was brushing my teeth, but my early days symptoms were fine, like didn't really have anything too bad. I was really lucky, like pregnancy wise, in terms of our early days anyway, we were all right. But obviously the biggest thing for me was just anxiety. I'm also diagnosed health anxiety. I've got health anxiety.
Okay.
So being pregnant with health anxiety is very difficult anyway. And
Yeah.
then COVID happened. And it was March, and it obviously everything locked down. And I was like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. I was like, horrible. It was the first thing I was just thinking, I'm going to die. I'm going to catch it. I'm going to die. Like, because you do think that, like with the flu, obviously you get jabs for it. So you're thinking, okay, if I catch it and I've got COVID, because they had no idea at the start really how it affected people.
It was so unknown, and I know that immediately everybody goes, oh, we need to be really careful of newborn babies, pregnant women, and really old people, like we do with most of our, illnesses that go around. But with this, it was just absolutely so unknown, like we just did not know. So it was totally within our, I think, realm of possibility to be worried enough to worry about like really terrible outcomes. Like we know way more now, but obviously back then it must have been like really frightening.
Yeah, it was. I just remember thinking, because obviously I had to work in work. I had to go into work the entirety of my pregnancy as well. And
Really?
I was pregnant really similar dates with one of my friends, and we both work in the same place, and we both had to work. And I remember saying, why can't I go on furlough? Why can't I go on furlow? I'm pregnant. And you don't. Nobody had no idea what's going on. And obviously, we were both really upset about this because we were like, we had no idea if we catch it, what's going to happen. And they were like, oh no, furloughs for companies that are struggling and stuff. And I was just like, but it's literally for the vulnerable people. And they said, oh, you can take it off unpaid. And I was like, oh yeah, that's fine. I can just take unpaid leave. Yeah, sure. And obviously, I didn't. I had to work for it. And I think that it really disillusioned me and sort of showed me what the company, I'm not working for them anymore, but it kind of disillusioned me about what they were like when that happened. It was really like a hard blow. Like, I can't believe that they just didn't care, really. They're a big enough company that they could have paid us, I believe.
That does seem pretty harsh.
It wasn't nice.
So
No.
you were feeling pretty anxious. Was this through the whole of your pregnancy? And
Yeah.
did you seek any support with that, or was that something you kind of already knew that you'd
Be
have?
honest, with COVID anyway, there wasn't really much there. Like, I think obviously when you think about getting pregnant, you think, oh, you know, all these things that you can do, you know, the community around you, like midwives and things. And I had none of that. And I think for a first pregnancy, I have no idea what it's like. And I think I felt so lonely. I know my midwife's name, but I don't know anything about her. I don't, like, I had maybe two or three appointments with her. And they were, you know, really short. And it was just really crap, I will say. Like, I get it that obviously COVID happened and people had to be strict and stuff with that sort of thing. But it was just, in terms of pregnancy, I do think I'm lucky. Like, I didn't have that difficult a pregnancy. But just with, like, my anxiety anyway, didn't obviously help. And then with COVID and just having no support, like, I had my husband, obviously, and all my sisters and my siblings and stuff, you know, they're there, but they're not close to me. They don't live close. So I live apart. It's just me and my husband up here. So just having that lack of any help, I don't think helped me towards the end either. So I know that if I got pregnant again, there's a lot of things I would change.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Like, you have, like you say, you have this idea of what it's going to be like and all the things you're going to do, like you say, and all the people that are going to surround you and help you, because we're not supposed to do these things on our own, and then you don't get any of that. So yeah, that's rotten.
I have a massive baby shower for my second one.
Oh,
I don't care.
God, yeah.
No, I'm having a big one because I didn't get mine.
So given that situation, I imagine that your husband wasn't coming with you to appointments and things like that, so it was quite lonely in that regard as well. How did the COVID situation impact the decisions that you made for your birth, and did they?
I mean, in my mind, I was like, oh, I just want to labour home as much as possible. That was in my mind. Just didn't go that way in the end, but I wanted to just be at home as much, because I knew that he wouldn't be able to come in, like, at all until a certain point. And he'd already missed so much. Like, he was really upset, like, when I told him, you know, you can't come to the scan, right? And he was like, what? And
devastating.
It's his first child as well. Like, and he was really upset about that. And I was like, you know, there's nothing I can do or say. Like, it's just, that's just how it is. And so we ended up going for a private scan anyway. So he was able to see her, which was really good. But it's just not felt the same as sort of attending the appointments and things like that, really, like,
you know,
together. But I think the only thing I thought was try and labor home as much as possible before going in.
And then when you say going in, were you planning on being at a hospital, or was the plan to be at a birth center? Did you have those options?
So mine was it was an alongside a birth a birth center alongside a hospital, so it was midwifery-led, that's what I wanted to, anyway. Given my health anxiety, I don't know if I'd feel comfortable laboring at home. My mind would just think, I'm going to have this is going to happen to me, this is going to happen to me, I'm going to get that, and, you know, I'm going to die, or the baby's going to die. I'm like, that is just something that is very real to me. Like, I don't, even for a second one, sometimes I think, well, maybe I'll try for home, but honestly, I don't know if it would be something that I'd be able to do.
Yeah, I think the alongside unit thing is a really great midway point for a lot of people, because there are people that think, actually, I don't know if I want to go to the full extreme of being in the obstetric unit hospital bit, but also I'm not comfortable with home birth. And an alongside unit is kind of where I kind of get the midwifery care that I want in a slightly less hyper-medicalized setting. But then if I do need that, it's literally like jog along the corridor, isn't it? So
yeah,
that I can understand.
The lift, I think, or something like that.
Yeah,
that was it.
So I can understand why that would have been quite reassuring, you know, and sort of a midway point for you. So
yeah.
So how are you feeling towards the very end of your pregnancy, and did you feel like labor was coming?
So I had no Braxton Hicks, nothing. I had absolutely nothing. Nothing at all. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I don't know. Like, my friend was saying, oh, yeah, I've got Braxton Hicks. I was like, oh, okay. Because she was looking like, we were due like a week apart. That didn't happen. Because Lily, from the start, I thought that my dates were wrong. She was due 18th of November. Now, when I went to the private scan at 6 weeks, they sort of predicted, I think it was closer to like the 21st of November, something like that. 21st, or might have been the 28th, actually, no, 28th of November, they sort of put her at. So when, obviously, at the 12 exam, I was always 18th of November. Oh, that's really nice. It's really close to my friend. But from the start, it just didn't feel right to me, because I knew my dates. I was tracking on Clue. So I was tracking on Clue. So I knew exactly when my period finished. I was talking to my sister, because I do think that my sister, Rosie, she's amazing. she advocates for you a lot, if you know what I mean. Like, she helped me with so much. Like, if I had anybody in my birth room, I'd probably have her next time, probably my sister and my husband. But she was like, she was telling me there's people that have been late, and you don't, inductions are not always needed. Like, I do think there are medical reasons to do it, and that's completely fine, but they're not like a necessary, they don't have to do it just because you're over something, a certain date, because the dates, it's a guess, it's not guaranteed that they're going to be born that day. And that kind of shows with the, like, I think it's like 3%, 5% of babies are born on actual due date or something, really small. So I was always like, I was just gonna let it happen. I was just gonna let it happen. And if it happened, whatever. And then I think maybe a week later, like, they were like, induction, and they talked about it, or might have been close to my due date, I can't remember. And I said, I don't really want to talk about it until I'm, talk to me about it when I'm 2 weeks late. So, 2 weeks over. Talk to
And
me
this
then.
is 2 weeks by their dates, right? Rather than yours.
Yes, right, by theirs. Yeah.
Okay.
So by my date, she was like perfectly healthy and perfectly fine. But yeah, they were like, I think when I, and then, that date just kept coming and closer and closer and closer and closer. And they were like, and it's like, it's closer, do you want induction? And they did, I think they offered me a sweep, and I was like, okay, I'll have a sweep, which is fine. I wasn't bothered by that. But I know that my cervix, I think, was very, very high, and very high. And it was like, it was just really, I don't, I think it's hard, isn't it? They say it's hard or something.
Closed for
I was,
business.
yeah, it was basically, she ain't ready, she's not cooked yet, so she's not coming. And that was at sort of 2 weeks, so nothing happened after that. It didn't hurt or anything, I didn't mind it, but it was just nothing. And that was at sort of 2 weeks, and nothing happened, and nothing happened. And then I had to speak to a birth choices lady, because they were like, we want to induce you. And I was like, I don't want to be induced. And I said to them, I'm not being induced. I was like, as long as she's fine, I'll come in for scans like every day. And as long as she's fine and healthy, there's no reason why I need to be induced. And that's sort of how I stood by it.
I think there's
I don't.
not many people necessarily know that as well. It's sort of sold to us that, well, once you get to 42 weeks, sorry, but that's it. Your time's up. See ya. But actually, you're right. If you're willing to go in and have a bit of monitoring now and again just to check baby's fine and you're fine, we're not robots. Like, we're not all going to have our babies on the same day, the same time, perfect. And yeah, there's no medical reason necessarily to do that. So, how did they react to you kind of saying no to that?
Well, I think they're all like, not in a horrible way, but they do judge you. Like, they're like, I don't think that's a very good, I mean, I think they just seem to think that you haven't read stuff, and you haven't looked it up, and you haven't, like, they just think you're ill-informed. You're like, because I don't think people say no to inductions. They just think, you're having it, oh, we're gonna book you in a production, and people just do it, don't they? So I don't feel like, oh, was that, and I was like, no, I don't want to induce, basically. I just said no, absolutely. Now, the birth choices lady was amazing. Now, she was really good, and I said to her, look, I think my dates are wrong. Based on my period, she shouldn't even really be coming out if you went on that, by the 28th sort of thing. And she was like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. And I sort of said where my dates was, and she goes, oh yeah, that makes sense in that way. And they were like, she was amazing. She was like, yeah, no, you stick to what you need to do. And she was so good, and just gave eased me, eased my mind a lot. But the doctor I spoke to, oh, she was awful. Like, no bedside manner at all. Just like, oh yeah, well, your baby will probably die if it goes over. Like, literally, pretty much like that. Like, oh, statistically, she'll probably, they'll die. And I was just like, thanks. And that does not help somebody who's got health anxiety anyway. Like, and it's just
No.
not any way to speak to somebody. And they sort of went over the risks, and I was like, I know the risks. I was like, I know she's healthy, and like, the second anything happens to her, I'll be here. I went in twice for reduced movements, and she was completely fine. The second I laid down there and had mono, she was kicking like crazy. But I never felt like, by the midwives, they were like, ne I never felt like I was wasting their time. They were like, just come in, just come in. Because I always think that the alternative was far worse than a, exactly. Like, the alternatives are far worse. I was like, the second I felt uncomfortable, I was like, no, I'm going in, because I did twice, and they were amazing. But this doctor, I just think, I do think some doctors have this like blanket between people, that they don't see them as people sometimes, and they're just like, oh, I've got to read this stuff out to them, if you know what I mean. And just made me feel really bad. And I think a lot of the stuff that happened leading up to actually going into labor sort of helped towards like how things went and how things went badly for me. that one thing didn't help, and the pressure of everybody like, oh, why is she not here? What's happening? You know, and everybody asking you, and so many people doing it. And because of how I was made to feel, it makes me think that the next, if I have another baby, I'll have an induction because of how it made me feel, of them all being like, why are you waiting?
Yeah, it's like you don't want to go through that again.
No, because I don't think, because obviously they say you're supposed to have oxytocin and, you know, feel good before you go into labor, isn't it? Mm. So like, happy hormone, and I think they sapped it out of me.
Sounds like it. Yeah, so it doesn't leave you in a particularly chilled, lovey-dovey state to let things happen on their own, does it?
Not really, no.
So what happened then after you had that chat at kind of 42, they're kind of 42 weeks?
It was basically I had to go in for monitoring, and they went in, they said, oh, she's really big, she's 8 pounds 6, she's got really long legs, or she's, you know, she's gonna be really big and all this stuff. And I was like, mm-hmm.
That's not even that big.
I know. And I was like, 8 pounds 6 isn't that big though, is it? Like, and but the way they sort of kept saying it, but she was just so high for ages. I literally couldn't breathe till the second she was born, basically. Mm. She was up for ages. And I don't think she really dropped. I don't know, but I don't think she dropped that much.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of it, she was just up there chilling basically the whole time.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall rock climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
So did labour begin by itself eventually, or did you need some other interventions? Yeah. Okay, it did. Tell us what happened.
So basically my mucus plug went, and I was like, oh, I think it's my mucus plug. I was talking to my sister, like, oh, I think this went. What did yours look like? And stuff like that. So communicating with her, like, oh, is this it? And pretty much within a couple of hours, I was just in pain. Like, and I will say, I don't think I felt contractions. I don't think I felt them. Not that they didn't hurt. I just didn't feel a surge. I didn't feel a relief from the second it started. My back was just in pain.
Okay, and so it was like it was constant for you, was it?
It was constant pain. And it's funny because I was talking to my sister about this just like a couple of weeks ago, and I think they're both saying like, you just don't know how it's going to affect you. And like, mm-hmm. I've always considered myself someone who's quite got a high pain tolerance, but the second that started, I didn't cope at all. I didn't cope with it. It was just pain from the start. I remember trying to be in the bath and just being like, oh, this is just sucks. So that was sort of like the Saturday it started, Saturday night. And I was like, everybody says to me, oh, just go to sleep, try and go to sleep. And I'd lie there and I was just writhing because it would just hurt. And like, I said to my husband, oh, go to sleep, because, you know, it could be really long, because my sister's was like 4 days. So I thought, like, oh, you know, it could be ages.
Mm.
Go to sleep. So I encouraged him to go to sleep. And I do think that next time I'll be like, no, you're staying awake. You got to help me. Okay. If I can't sleep, you can. Not in a horrible way, but I think I should have relied on him hell of a lot more than I did.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot to just do with how I thought I should be in labour, if you know what I mean. Like, I come from a long line of a lot of people who had natural births, and like in my mindset, I was like, oh yeah, I'll be able to do it. Like, I was quite open with the idea, like, oh, you know, if I have a C-section, I have a C-section, whatever, you know, what happens. But I think part of me definitely believed that I would just have a natural labor. You know, my mum had 5 naturally, like my sister had 1 naturally, my other sisters, she's had 2 naturally, 1 on the way. Like, my cousins have all had them naturally. Like, everyone I know close to me pretty much has had them babies, you know, vaginally, like completely. In my mind, I was like, yeah, I'll be fine. Although I think I was telling myself, oh yeah, you know, I can, whatever happens, happens. But I think somewhere I definitely thought that I would have it naturally.
I think that's fair enough, given the experiences around you. We all have preconceived ideas of birth. You know, if you were in a family where everybody has C-sections, you probably would be like, well, that's probably what's going to happen to me. Like,
yeah.
That's totally normal to assume that. So yeah, probably in the back of your mind, you were kind of working to that. Yeah, well, I'm open to whatever happens, but you know, this is what's happened to everyone around me. So I make, you know, it's okay to make that assumption.
Yeah. And that's what I did, I think, like internally, but not saying it to myself.
And I'm interested, given that that was your family's experience and everything, did you do any particular birth preparation or education classes or anything like that? Or did you just kind of feel like you would kind of just see what happened and go with it?
I think I tried to be quite open. I did do very minimal hypnobirthing sort of thing because my sister sort of like she had the online thing, so she sort of gave it to me and said, you know, look at it. And I do know now that I would be doing everything next time. I think I'll probably have a doula. I'll do the hypnobirthing and I'll do it consistently and regularly. I want to do it all because I just think that I was not prepared enough.
Yeah.
I don't think I planned enough. I didn't even make a birth plan. I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, if I need an epidural, I need epidural, I need this, whatever, I don't mind. But I think I need to have a plan because I think I didn't have enough power to myself. You know, when they say you're being empowered and making the informed, empowered choice. I don't think I really had that because I was just sort of like too wishy-washy with it, if you know what I mean. Whatever, you know, it happens. And I think for me, person who now that I have my daughter, I like to have my meals planned all week. Yeah. I like to plan activities. I need to plan it next time. And I realised that after, like, I definitely should have planned it more and, like, had an idea in my head.
It's really hard, though. It's hard because you've got two camps, haven't you? A lot of people will plan everything. There's no, you know, then you learn everything and all of that. And then you've got the sort of, well, you can't plan birth because things go off piece. So don't, you know, it's really hard to know what to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And now you know yourself, and you probably know yourself even better now you've had your first baby, that you'll know what you want next time. So,
yeah. I definitely feel like I know a bit more, but who knows? I mean, I don't know if I'd even have it naturally. That's one thing. I'm like, will I go natural? I don't know. Especially with my health anxiety, I'm like, will I go and try for it? Part of me really wants to, but then the other part's like, I don't know though. I haven't got there yet. I'm not near it, so it's fine.
Deal with it when you get there.
I do feel like I'll have to almost like reassess my birth trauma type thing.
I think that's a really valuable piece of advice, is when you're heading into a second birth, is to really take the time to process and go through your first birth, even if you think everything was totally fine, you know, to just run over with somebody who maybe does that professionally or is like outside of your family unit, to talk through everything that happened and maybe, yeah, just kind of make some peace with it before you go into the next thing.
It's quite funny because actually I think my sister said to me, she goes, oh, you had quite a traumatic birth. And I was like, oh, did I? After the birth. And I didn't really think of it in that way when I first had it. But thinking back on it now, I'm almost like post-traumatized by it, if you know what I mean. Like, that's the story, I guess. I don't have PTSD, but it's like, yeah, I like processing it later. I'm like, oh, actually, that was quite bad.
Yeah, sometimes it does. It takes a bit of time to work out what happened.
Yeah.
So you'd gone into labour and you were finding it really, really tough. And it sounds like you were just not really getting the types of contractions that you were expecting. So the kind of, you know, rise, intensity, and then like a break between things. So how did you cope with that? And did you make a decision to go into the birth centre a bit sooner than maybe you were planning?
Yeah, we went in a lot sooner than I thought I'd plan. Like, the problem was, I think, as well, is that, you know, you can get the timer apps to time your contractions. I tried doing that, but because it was hard to tell the difference between my pain and the contraction, it was like, obviously I might have had a bit of a rise, but I don't feel like I could really sense it, if you know what I mean. Like, I don't think I could really know. So I thought, oh, you know, I must be okay. Like, let's just go in. So I went in, and obviously my husband waited outside, and it was like, went in, and they were like, oh, 2 centimeters. I said, I'll go home, because otherwise, you know, you should just go home. This is what they tell you if you're not 4 centimeters. So I was like, okay. And I went home, and they were like, you know, try to sleep. And I just remember, like, again, I tried to rub my own back, and I was like, I should have told my husband to just do it. And he sort of tried at the same time. I was just like, I'm just not coping very well. And I was like, I just need to go back in. And like, I think my health anxiety anyway didn't help. So then I went back in, and they were like, you know, you are only like 2-3 centimeters. It's like, you haven't progressed since. I don't think it was long. And they were like, we can give you some pethidine and you can wait here. And I was in the birth, so with the pool, so in the main sort of like midwifery led unit at the time. And they were like, give you pethidine. And they sort of gave me that. And I just remember it didn't do a lot. Like, but I think it helped me just relax maybe a little bit.
Were you feeling all the pain in your back?
It was just all in my back. Like, I don't think I felt traction. I don't think, because obviously it's supposed to be the muscles in your abdomen. I don't think I felt that at any point in my labour.
Did anybody mention or talk to you about the position of your baby?
Not really.
Okay.
No, I don't think anybody mentioned that at all. Like, I just remember being on my own. I was just left there. I was in a room by myself because my husband couldn't come in. So I was just lying there, like, sort of trying to half sleep. And I just remember drifting a bit, and I had to do a COVID test and throw up everywhere because I can't. It's horrible, isn't it? Anyway, when they put it down your throat, and I've got a terrible gag reflex apparently. So I just would throw up, and it was horrible. And they tried it a couple of times, and they did eventually. They had to get a stick literally to hold my tongue down because I think a natural urge to just like kick the stick out of my mouth and stuff. So that wasn't fun. And then I was just sort of left there. And then they were like, oh, they popped in every now and again, just, oh, do you want the water? And I was like, yeah. And I just remember being in the water. It was really nice. I felt like that was at least a bit better. Like, maybe if I'd stayed in there longer, then it might have been different. I don't know. But I remember feeling like that helped a little bit. But I do remember, like, I was nearly falling asleep at this point. I'm trying to think how long it was, because I know I was in the hospital. It was like 5 days it was over. But just trying to, it's so blurred when it started. But I know it started Saturday, and then I think I was in Saturday maybe in the afternoon or night, and then I was in hospital by Sunday night maybe. And I was only 2-3 centimeters, and then I was just there in the pool, and they were like, oh, do you want to get out? And we'll just like, they wanted to just check on me and see how things were going. And I think it was like, oh no, I have not, literally hadn't progressed past like 2 centimeters, three centimeters. And then I think I remember being really, really upset, because I think one lady was like, I mean, you might be 3, but I feel like you might even just be 2, so you're barely 3. And I was like, great. Like,
oh, the language is so dismissive, isn't it? And you're like doing so much work to keep yourself together.
Yeah, by myself, because obviously my husband couldn't be there, so I was on my own.
Yeah.
And then they suggested, because my waters were bulging for ages, they were bulging. They were like, oh, you know, you could stay in here. That's what they gave me a choice. You could either go up to the induction ward, and basically you're on a queue then if you go to the induction ward to be induced, or I stay in the midwifery let unit and just have to just see how it goes and just cope with it. And then if I wanted to later, if I stayed in the midwifery unit and wanted to later get induced, like get my waters popped, I'd be in the queue. So like, either way, but I'd have to go to the back of the pool. So I was like, oh yeah, I'll go up to the induction ward just to like, so they put my water. So I was like, oh fine, I'll just go there. I wish they had told me before that it was incredibly busy, because I was even told that night somebody had got to 10 centimeters waiting to be induced on that ward that night, because it was apparently like the busiest night of like the week or something, or the busiest night of the month. It was just crazy. So I was like, I should have just waited there, because I waited anyway. I was just waiting. And again, I was just, at first I was in a room just by myself. I just was calling my sisters and sort of just trying to eat at this ward.
And so the reason that they wanted you to go up for to join the kind of induction queue, is that because they felt like having your waters broken would speed up the dilation, and then your husband could come and it would all just happen a bit faster?
Yeah, I think that they were hoping that obviously if I had more broken, it would help. I think as well, because they knew I was quite overdue, or well, their words, that I was overdue. They were like, oh, okay, well, we need, you know, break the walls and get things started and stuff. Because I was just very slow. Like, it was like two or three days at this point that I was just still at 2 centimeters. Like, that's as far as I hadn't gone any further than that. And I was having pethidine and everything and all the, I don't know what they probably give you paracetamols as well. I can't remember, but I was getting lots of stuff. I think I was assessed loads of times. I don't know how many times I was actually like given sweeps and things as well. Like, they were checking a lot. So
yeah, that's hard as well, being on your own, because no one's like really making sure that you're like really well fed and hydrated. And if you had a partner there to be able to make sure that you were feeling all right in that way. I imagine there weren't enough midwives to be completely one-on-one all the time with you.
I just remember, like, they'd check in, they'd come in and check and say, are you okay? Do you want any pain things? And then that would be it. That's all I'd had for, like, these 3 or 4 days being there. Probably up to the fourth day, really. I was just on my own. Really.
And your poor husband, was he just waiting?
Basically, he was waiting for the call, and he was just like, are you okay? He'd ring me every day because he'd started his paternity. So he started to protect, so he was just at home, walking the dog, went on long walks with the dog, and, you know, just sort of like, just waiting. And obviously he'd call me, and, you know, different times and see how I was. And I was just like, just waiting. And obviously I think he felt very powerless. Like he didn't have a good birth experience either, because he just wasn't able to help. And I think for him, he's an engineer, right? And if he gets a problem, he likes to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, it was really hard, I think, a really hard experience just to sort of be like, I can't do anything.
So at what point did he, or was he able to come to you? Because I assume, so you were waiting in this kind of queue. Yeah. What eventually happened? What was the tipping point?
Right, so I started Saturday, and then Sunday I was in the hospital, Monday, Tuesday, and then Tuesday night, evening, afternoon time, my waters broke by themselves, waiting to be broken. I was like, is this my waters? And they were like, oh, they're clear. And I sort of showed them, and they were literally looking up at the light, like, no, they're slightly green, like the tiniest tinge of green. And then they were like, oh, no, you got straight up to the delivery ward, because obviously it's slightly green. But I talked to my mum about this afterwards, and she had 5 children, and all of her waters were green, and they're all healthy and fine.
I was going to say, varying degrees of meconium, and it's really debated at what point you would class it as like a problematic thing that is potentially going to cause risk. You know, and some people will continue and have fine births even if there is meconium. So, yeah, it sounds like, if they were really squinting and looking at it, it sounds like you didn't necessarily think it was like, oh my god, there's meconium.
I didn't. Like, okay. I didn't look like it, because she literally had to look into a light. Like, she was looking at the light bulb, like, oh, it's slightly green. And then they were like straight upstairs. But I remember, because my friend, her child's 6 months now, but I think she had like basically black waters and stuff. And obviously she went straight to the hospital. Her labor was super quick, but it's just like, it just felt really odd that they would be like, oh my gosh, you know, straight up there, considering like, you barely see it. And I was like, I don't think there was a problem. I really don't. And like, my mum said all her waters were, you know, none of them were clear. And, you know, she had 5 healthy children, all fine. I think maybe they just needed the beds, because there were so many people trying to be induced or something. Maybe they were like, oh, just get her up there or something. So yeah, at that point they were like, I rang my husband, like, yeah, you can come in now. And this was on, so this would have been the Tuesday evening. And so we went straight up there, and I was like, please give me an epidural right now.
You must have been exhausted.
I think I was so tired. I hadn't really eaten. Like, I remember nibbling tiny pieces, and like, I tried to drink lots. I think drinking helped me more. And I remember having like snacks in my dressing gown and stuff, like trying to nibble at it. And my sister did encourage me. She was like, you need to drink more and try to sleep. I just can't sleep in a hospital anyway. And then sleeping when you're in pain is, I think I was drifting. I don't think I was sleeping. I was probably passing out by that point, you know?
Yeah.
went straight upstairs, and I was like, give me an epidural, please, right now. Basically. I don't remember the lady who gave me the epidural. I wasn't bothered by her, but the guy, so there was a guy that literally holding my shoulders. And so I had gas and air while I did it, and he was holding my shoulders. And his voice was so calm. I was like, I probably could have gone through labor if he just was there the whole time, honestly. He was so calming. And the epidural did not go well, I will say. It's a point of contention for me and my husband because of how long it took. It was 50 minutes. And
gosh, that's a long time, isn't it?
I don't know if they're legally allowed, or they're supposed to go on that long. Bear in mind, you're leaning over your baby, like, on that. I think that didn't help towards what happened after. But we're a bit like, we don't like that it went on that long and they allowed it to. I think they should have just offered us something else, you know, or told me it's taking too long, we can't do it, basically, because it didn't work properly anyway. But this guy, he was amazing. I was like, oh, I could just listen to him. And then at one point, they were like, I think they had to readjust or something. And he left. And I think they put my husband there. My husband was like on the other side, but they put my husband where he was. And I was like, no, tell the guy to come back. I need to talk to him. And he came back and it was like, and they did it. And it was okay, they've done it. And I think they were quite relieved. Obviously, I was just like, I was so out of it. It was quite blurry. Like, I didn't realize it took that long. But then we got it in. And I think at that point, they then wanted to just see how far I was at that point, and I was 5 centimeters at that point. And then I think they laid me down on the bed. I don't know what position I was in. I had to stay elevated though, because the second I went further down, her heart rate was dropping. So they were like, okay, we have to elevate her because it seemed like she was okay there. And yeah, so the doctor came in. I was 5 centimeters, and then she was like, I'll come back in 4 hours. Obviously, when your next epidural dose is due or whatever. Is due and see how you're going.
Yeah, I was going to
And
say, did you manage to get some bloody rest?
I did, but I don't think it was like, it was like just dead sleep, it was basically. And obviously my husband was sort of trying to sleep as well. So he was asleep on there, on the so on the little chair thing, and I was dead out. But I know that before I went out, they were like, oh, you've got a fever. So they were okay, and they were like, I think I had sepsis. They were like, okay, straight on the antibiotics. So I had intravenous antibiotics straight away because obviously I was spiking a fever and her heart rate. Like I said, the epidural didn't work completely. So I could still kind of feel it in certain places. And then they sort of came back 4 hours later and I was still 5 centimeters. I hadn't progressed. And I do know that with epidurals, that generally happens. It's just slow it down sometimes.
Can do.
But the problem was more so the fact that her heart rate was now dropping for longer, each
Yeah.
contracting. So it was just getting worse, and she was in getting more distressed and stressed out.
And I think it's harder when you have an epidural to try things like different positions, because sometimes babies are in a certain position and actually just moving onto a different into a different position can change their heart rate. But if you have an epidural, it's so much harder to be able to do those things.
I was like, I don't care, and that's just. I'm like, I'm so, I was so, whatever. She was like, so, okay, we're going to say, have a C-section. I was like, okay,
Okay,
let's
so
go.
they suggested that to you, and you were just in that moment,
I
you were
was
done.
done by this point. I was like, let's go. I was like, get this baby out, let's go.
Like you had worked your ass off for like 5 days. Yeah, it's a long time, and like mostly on your own. So, yeah, God, you've given it a walloping go, haven't you? Like,
I just wonder whether. To be honest, if I'd even got to 10 centimeters, whether I even would have been able to push, to be honest, because I was like, I was so tired. Like, I don't know. Like, part of me is like, would I even be able to? Because I was so tired. I'd barely eaten. I barely slept sort of for the five days. Oh, that's awful.
yeah, you weren't like in the best state to be able to do that, feeling like
Yeah.
strong and confident to do that. So you'd made that decision with, I assume, the consultant or surgeon who came in, and did they get you prepared quite quickly?
Yeah, it was pretty much straight away. Like, they were like, oh, hey, let's go. I was like, all right. So because
So
I could still feel it, they were like, can you feel it? I was like, yeah, I can feel that. They were like, okay, we'll try a spinal tap. And so they flip you over. Oh, so graceful, isn't
it is,
it?
yeah.
Yeah, so they flip you over and they tried it. They literally tried maybe 5 minutes. They're like, no, this is not working. We're going to have to go under. I was like, okay, this is
Okay.
fine. Like, I think my husband has, he was ushered out because they have to, because it has to be sterile and stuff. He was ushered right out, and at that point, for him, I think he was like, "I'm gonna lose my wife." He
Yeah.
literally, I think, a couple of sort of tears. He was thinking, "I'm gonna lose her, or one of them, or both of them, or something like that." He was literally thinking, he might be a single dad or something, or just.
Yeah, in this moment, I imagine. So, if your baby's heart rate is still like really struggling, and also if you've got a fever and it's all a bit frantic, to then be told, right, no, you have to get out because we're just doing it, it's like,
Yeah,
ah.
it was so quick and there was so much going on, and he was just like, what? Like, he'd never
Yeah.
been for a birth, like to a birth, or obviously, he'd never been to a birth, and it was just probably the most opposite of what we probably would have wanted,
Yeah.
basically. And so yeah, we had to go under, and that
Yeah.
was again weird. But my surgery went really well. It was excellent. Like, I didn't lose much blood. Everything was fine. Most surreal experience ever is going under, I think. Like, you're
Yeah.
there and you're gone. That's it. It's not sleeping, it's gone. And then the next second I was waking up in the hallway and I said, where's my baby?
Wow. Yeah, because I think the weirdest thing is waking up after a general anaesthetic because you're just like in a totally different place to where you were.
I was in the
And
hallway. I literally, I think I immediately upon leaving the operating room, I was awake.
how was your baby? Was she okay?
Yeah, she's amazing. She was
Okay.
fine. There's another reason why I was really annoyed with the way that, obviously this is afterwards, the way that they were like, oh, you need to have an induction, and all this stuff, because her placenta was amazing. They said it was super healthy. She didn't look like a late baby. She didn't have, she wasn't like dried, like they say, but the placenta was so healthy. She wasn't a late baby, is what they said to me. She was
And
not late.
how much did she weigh?
7 pound 3.
Okay.
She
Yeah.
was, oh, she wasn't big. She was,
That's a really nice size.
but because I got sepsis, she was also on intravenous antibiotics from the start. I think my husband went into the separate room, and then like within like 10 minutes, Lely was with him. She was, oh, here's my baby, and he was holding her, so he held her, and then they whisked her off because they had to check her because obviously long labor and everything else in her heart rate. But so she was straight on antibiotics, and then I was wheeled out. I think maybe, I don't know how long it takes because I wasn't awake for it, but half an hour probably later, I guess. She was like, where's my baby? And she was brought in pretty quickly after.
Okay.
Like, so it wasn't long, like immediately in, and I was just like, oh, she's so beautiful. And I remember listening to the video. I hate it because it's my voice sounds so weird because I've just obviously you've been under surgery and your voice just sounds croaky and horrible. And I was just like, oh, she's so good. It just makes me cringe a little bit. It's amazing, but it makes me cringe because my voice sounds so funny. And I was just like, yeah, I got to hold her quite quickly and was given that toast. And do you know what? It was amazing toast for me because I hadn't eaten very well, but it was so dry, it was like eating cardboard because my mouth
Oh,
was so dry. Because obviously, I think when you go under, you have to have like a tube down your throat and everything else, stuff
yeah.
like that. Which they didn't tell me about. Like, I had no idea. I've never had surgery before. They didn't tell me about that. My husband then had to leave within like an hour after she was born, or an hour after we were in the recovery room because there was a bed for me downstairs. They were like, okay, bye. I was like, okay.
That's
Yeah.
incredible. You can barely lift your baby at that stage. Like, you can barely lift your own
I still
arms.
have my catheter in, so I can't get out and lift her up. It was really crap. She was luckily quite calm for like the first cup day, which they normally are, I think, anyway. She was really calm, but I just remember thinking, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, you don't, of course you don't.
I've always been around babies, but you just, when you have one of your own that's so small, just there, and you have to, oh my God, I've got to change them, I've got to like feed them, and it was just like, oh.
And also, I know that some hospitals will get really funny if you kind of sleep with your baby holding on to them, or like in the bed. But at the same time, the alternative is like putting them down in a cot where they're not happy, and you can't even reach over to pick them up if you've had the surgery, and there's no partner there to be able to then
Yeah.
soothe the baby. So it's like a cycle of just stress for everyone.
Yeah, because
Did
you just
you?
have to call the nurse. Like, my baby's crying. Like, I couldn't do anything. I was just like, put in this room, and it was a windowless room. So it was a wall, and there was curtains around me. And then
Yeah.
when the curtains were open, there was no windows. I couldn't see daylight at all, and there was no ventilation in there, which was a big no-no for COVID. And being in that room, I was only in there for 2 days because I was like, I need to move rooms. I cannot be in this room anymore because I'm so stressed out. Like, I was obviously, especially after having a baby, you're all emotional, aren't you? I was like, I need to move rooms. I need light. I need some sort of daylight. Just a room that has at least a window that can be opened, or it can share with other beds. Because I
Yeah.
think one woman had the window and she had a curtain closed the whole time around the window, which is, it's in a room. But I remember being like in this room, this dank room with curtains around me, and just hating it because I was like, with this baby that then screamed, I think, for ages on the second night. And I was like, God, she just screamed and screamed, and it was hard to feed her. And in this horrible room, and I hadn't seen daylight in probably like 3 or 4 days.
And I assume so. Were you being kept in for that amount of time because they were keeping an eye on, obviously, you've had the surgery, but I imagine they're keeping an eye on the infection markers for you and your baby. Is that right?
So I think she had to be on a 5 day course of antibiotics. This is why she was in for 5 days. And I think mine finished maybe day 3, I think, just in when it worked out. And then they moved me, I think, on like maybe day three. And oh my God, it was the best thing ever. Just moving in rooms. I literally felt like more human than I had the whole time since being in labor. Like I was like, oh, I can see the sunlight. I remember watching the sun come up and feeling like I felt like I was going to cry because I could see the sun.
Yeah.
Because my sister was like, because I think they said to me, oh, she might be jaundiced, she might have to stay longer. And I was like, I'm not having her stay longer. My sister was like, get her in the sun, get her in the sun. So I literally moved the cot and put her in the light, and she did. She was fine. I think they do a test, don't they, to see the levels, but her levels were fine.
And your husband could come and visit just at standard hours. Is that right?
Nope.
No, not at all.
He was not allowed to visit for 5 days. I remember because there's a girl whose baby was born a day later than mine or a day before mine, and her husband was allowed to visit. And I was like, and that's another complaint that's going on. The thing is the fact that I could leave, walk out my room, go down an elevator, and go out and see my husband, but he couldn't come up and say, you know, and visit. But I can go out. But surely, if he's got COVID and I'm going down to see him, I'm going to bring it in.
Yeah.
And that's what frustrated me so much, is that he was like, I'll do a test, I'll wear a mask, he'll do everything that he needed to do. He just wants to visit to see his
kid. And also, you're then asking the person who's had the surgery to do all the hard work, like physically going into that environment and moving their body. Yeah, it does not make any sense. And I think in the years to come, we will look back at the maternity situation during that period, and it will just, I think, yeah.
It was awful. And that's why I'm so much like, I want like a doula. I want someone that I know going into it to be there with me. That's what I need. I need that person there to be like, come on, Bina, get up and go move and go walk and get on the ball and do stuff. Because I didn't have that. I didn't have anyone there. I was by myself the whole time. And I think it was the most loneliest experience I've ever had. Giving birth to a baby that's going to be part of your life for the rest of your life, and it's so lonely. Like, make that make sense.
Yeah.
The situation after was awful. In terms of C-section, I would do it again. It was easy. Mm-hmm. It was a breeze. My C-section recovery, I had maybe 1 or 2 days when I couldn't get up in bed back at home, and my husband had to basically pull me up, and I did like properly cry out because it was painful. But that's why I overdid it. But I was up and about straight away. The surgery was fine. The surgery itself, there was nothing wrong with that. They were excellent. Surgeons were so nice. I, you know, chatted with them. They were great. There was no stitches that needed to come out. There's no stitches that you could even see. Like, you can't see it because of where it is on the bikini line. Like, it's amazing what they can do now with like C-section. I think it used to be a massive scar upwards up your belly. Like, it's just nothing like that now. So the C-section itself, easy.
Yeah.
The rest of it, yeah. The aftercare was, to be fair to the midwives and the nurses there, they were really nice and super, like, you know, they were there to help. And I remember one night they did take Lely and they just sometimes just walk them up and down the corridors and stuff and soothe them. And they did that for me, I think, once or twice at least, which was really nice because I was so tired and I wasn't resting because I was trying to feed her. And I remember up until I was like, no, I wanted to establish breastfeeding because I that was just something that I wanted to do. I do think that what helped me, because I had the C-section, is that I expressed before I was pregnant.
Okay.
So I was expressing. So when she was born, I could like pump and I can get quite a bit out. And they were like, oh, you know, you can get quite a lot out. Just obviously they were like, that's good. But I do think that there are not enough lactation consultants in hospitals to help people.
No, definitely not. It's one of the biggest things I hear time and time again, is how much people wish they'd have that additional feeding support. I mean, were you able to establish a breastfeeding relationship while you were in hospital? Were you able to work on that, given that it was just the two of you, basically?
Yeah, so the best person I had was my sister. Like, she was just like, do this.
Yeah.
And having her, like, her advice was the best thing for me, because obviously she still breastfeeds her child now. Like, that's amazing. And she was, I always said, oh, my lactation consultant, like, jokingly to some of the nurses said this, and they'd be like, oh, okay, like, but yeah, she really helped me sort of, I think, because when I first got in there, I was just so like, when am I, like, they're like, oh, have you fed your baby? I was like, oh, no. I was like, I didn't always think to, like, do it. I definitely was in, like, oh my God, what am I doing mode, I think, from the start. So, but then I had a couple of times, and she sort of wasn't really latching very well, but she really tried, and I remember one nurse saying to me, or one midwife, sorry, saying to me, oh, you know, she must have a breast nipple aversion. And I was just like, she's like a day old, 2 days old. How can she have a nipple aversion? Like, that doesn't make sense. And I was like, and I was like, oh my God. I think I said that to my sister. And she was like, no, she doesn't. Like, she's 2 days old. She hasn't got a nipple aversion. But there was this one lady who, she comes in and does the observations and stuff. So she'll take your blood pressure and things. And I don't think she was a midwife, but she might have been like a nurse or something. But she came in and she was like, she came to help and she latched it every time. She was amazing. She just came and she goes, oh yeah, let this do it. And she did that 3 times for me. And after the third time I could do it. And then I was like, I really wanted to establish breastfeeding. So I was like, every 2 hours I got myself up and I did it. I was like, every 2 hours I just got myself into the routine just to make, because I was worried that they would like say, oh, you can't go home because she's not being breastfed, or try to suggest formula and things like that. And I made it every 2 hours, and then by day two my milk came in day two, like really early. I definitely feel like I'm one of those women who could just make milk for the nation. Like, I so much milk, I feel like I could just, it was fine. Like, it was not easy. Like, the first 6 to 8 weeks were awful and horrible, and they were good, but they were hard, really establishing it. But since then, like, once you get to a point you're comfortable, it's like, yeah, it's so easy. But yeah, getting past that is hard.
Thank you so much for sharing your birth story. And I wanted to ask what advice you would give somebody who maybe is heading into planning a birth and doesn't know what's going to happen, and maybe, or maybe even what you would tell your past self.
I think just be nice to yourself and just realise that, yeah, stuff happens and things can go really wrong, but it's also okay to want a birth of your choice. It's okay to want that, and it's okay to plan for it. So if somebody says, oh, you shouldn't plan for a birth, don't listen to them. Plan it, and then just have a second plan, a plan B, a plan C, a plan D, a plan E for when or if things go wrong. Without making a plan, I think then you might flounder like I did.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like having somebody who really understood your particular feeding goals was really helpful. So for you, it was your sister, and somebody who doesn't question it and just knows you inside out of, and isn't going to judge you one way or the other, I think that's really valuable as well. So I think if it's not your sister, maybe somebody who can be there for you, like you have that support.
If you really want to breastfeed, you need to find a support that is going to be there to be like, you can do this. And I know it's not possible for every person, I know that, but it's possible for a lot more people than that who actually do it. And I know from one of my friends who, her child was less than 24 hours old, was told she was starving him, and I was like, I was disgusted.
Yeah, that's not okay.
Doesn't breastfeed now, and I do think a lot of it was to do with that, things that she was being told, and she needed someone to be there and say that's not true, and to really just to know it as well. Breastfeeding is so, it's hard, it's amazing, but there's just not enough support there for it. I do think, because sometimes it's like, depending on the person, you either need somebody who's going to tell you to get up and get off your ass and do it, or you need someone who's there and like, it's okay, you can do it, like, but somebody who knows what you need, knows which side of it you need and at what point.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that is why having a birth partner is so valuable. And it's just such a shame that regulations and stuff prevented you from having that in the moment. So, but thank you for sharing your story of the experience of so many people who would have been in your shoes as well, not having the support that they needed. So those stories are really important to hear as well, because so many people are going to listen to that and really relate to that and think, yeah, it wasn't just me. So thank you.
Thank you again, Sabina, for sharing your story. Sometimes we can shy away from talking about birth experiences which weren't the positive tales that we've longed to hear. But I think when we really get to chatting about stories like Sabina's, we're able to put things into context, and often we can take some hugely valuable pieces of advice from them. whether that is learning more about your rights in hospital, making a solid birth plan document, or simply just being prepared for the possibility that things may not go the way we expect. That is all for this week, and I can't believe it, but we are very, very quickly heading towards the end of this season already. I've just got two more episodes to share with you before season three is officially wrapped up. I'm yet to decide exactly what the plan will be for season four, but there will be some kind of extended break as I am actually due to have my second baby in the spring. My maternity leave is looming. I promise to keep you all updated on the podcast plans for the coming months, but either way, it's all going to be very exciting. If you found this episode valuable, you can share it by copying and sharing the link from your podcast provider. You can also share my posts on Instagram or Facebook. I am at Real Birth Podcast. Or to give my show a little helping hand, you could rate and review on your podcast platform. Or you can subscribe to be alerted to new episodes, which all really helps me. Big, big thanks to you all. I will see you next Wednesday for another amazing birth story. Bye.